Good morning. My name is Suze Appel. I'm one of the assistant teachers, and I'll be guiding us this morning and offering some thoughts. Here we are on the very last Sunday of the year and the last Sunday of talking about the Paramis. So this morning, I want to talk about two things. One is some ideas about how to practice with the Paramis in daily life. And then the second part will be just kind of following Nina's talk from last week, where she shared some of the highlights for her and her practice. I'll be sharing a little bit of some of the highlights for me. The first practice, I think, is really has been important for me, is looking at the opposites of the Paramis that show up. The stinginess, the rationalizations, the little white lies, all of the different ways that the opposites of the Paramis show up. And I started practicing with that back at the very first month with generosity, when I had this major stinginess attack and spent time being in that stingy body mind. And realized how much I didn't like that person, that stingy person, and feeling the ouch, the pain of all that stinginess really helped me in this situation to respond from more generosity. And yet, even though I'm offering this as a practice, I was a little unsure, a little hesitant as to whether this was a good idea. So yesterday, when I was at Clear Mountain Monastery, I went up to the monk who was visiting and gave the talk. And I asked him, because he reminded us, as many teachers do, that one of our jobs is to abandon the unwholesome and cultivate the wholesome. And I was wondering if practicing with the opposites of the Paramis, kind of the unwholesomes, would that be a good idea? And he was very encouraging and reminded me of one of the teachings, which is don't be in a hurry to move on and to feel the burn of it. So with that encouragement, I want to talk a bit about how to practice with the opposites of the Paramis. So I already talked about the stinginess, and these are my opposites, and you might come up with some of your own. Because there's another opposite in generosity, where there's the need to be acknowledged for what a generous person I am. That might be what comes up a lot. And so really staying with how all of that feels, like this monk said to me yesterday, feel the burn of it. Feel the ouch of it. With sila and the precepts, I think I've also shared this, that the fifth precept, which is to abstain from any intoxicants that might lead to heedlessness, I'm still working on this one as to whether it's a rationalization that I don't take in any intoxicants to the point of heedlessness, or whether it's something that I can really say is still wholesome, or whether it isn't. So I'm still working on that one. But I think a lot of the parts of our ethical compass, our sense of morality, is a real open field for these opposites. With renunciation, just really feeling the stickiness of those things we are unwilling to let go of. Instead of, don't berate yourself for it. Don't come up with all of the storyline as to why I need to hold on to this, but to, what does it feel like when there's so much stickiness? When you're just holding on for dear life to something, and where you can't even get to the teachings about the benefits and the drawbacks. The parami of wisdom? Well, the first one, of course, is fantasy thinking. You know, we're just kind of in la-la land, or a lot of denial about the truth of anicca. I think this is often true with people who are in my age group, where all the manifestations of aging are so apparent. It's kind of hard to be in denial out of them. But sometimes there's so much resistance or anger about them, which is a kind of form of denial. I think another opposite that comes up in the wisdom parami is the holding on to certain views and attitudes, and just that's the way it is. It's kind of like, well, this is who I am, and I will always be that way, and just deal with it. That kind of, it's kind of a combination of the stickiness of renunciation and the fantasy and the denial of anicca. The teachings that we've been using all year, I think this may have come from Sylvia Boorstein. She says that there are two options to every situation: balanced acceptance, which is freedom, or embittered resistance, which is suffering. In the parami of energy and effort, I remember talking about how out of balance I was, and I remember feeling how the kind of the ouch of being so out of balance. So I had overscheduled my life to such an extent. It was kind of that greediness that I wanted to be able to do everything and see everybody and be everywhere and have it all. So that's one kind of out of balance. And the other kind is kind of a slothfulness, a sluggishness, a dullness. And again, you know, you're going to have your own experience of opposites. With patience, the biggest one for me is insisting that things or people be different from who they are or what they are, that not allowing things to be the way they are has less to do for me with patience around time, although I think for a lot of people that might be where the opposite comes up. In truthfulness, all those little lies, being willing to accept kind of half truths. For me, sometimes I get confused between a preference and a truth, and then I hold on to the preference as if it's the ultimate fullness of truth. That's the way Ajahn Suchito talked about truthfulness, the fullness. What about when you get caught up in gossip? So there are all different ways to look at and be with some of the opposites in truthfulness. On determination and resolve, I think they go both ends of the continuum. On the one hand, I can kind of see, you know, especially after you've like done a lot of personal work and then you just sit back and rest on your laurels and say, well, I've done enough. And it's kind of avoiding whatever else is up. And then the other end is kind of feeding indecision and almost seeing and feeling the seductiveness of not making decisions and not practicing resolve and determination. Stephen Batchelor says that we need to keep taking stock of our lives in an unsentimental, uncompromising way. And when you don't do that, when you're just kind of avoiding even looking at how things are, that's also one of those opposites, I think, of the parami of resolve. With metta, it's an easier one, those when we feed the thoughts of ill will, or when we just can't stop focusing on our difficult person. And when we do that focus, what comes up is all of their terrible qualities. And then with equanimity, that passivity or indifference, one of the ways it can show up for me, I talk a lot about practicing with the five recollections, and the fourth one, which says, I will become everyone and everything I hold dear is of the nature to change, and I will become separate from all I hold dear. And it could result in me becoming kind of indifferent to those I hold dear so that the pain of loss won't be so great. So those are just some of the ways the opposites show up in my life. And I really encourage you to consider practicing with it. A second practice has to do with the Metta Sutta. I really think it's a great idea to try to memorize at least part of it. Maybe download it, print it out, and put it up in your house a lot of places. You know, the Metta Sutta starts with, this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. They're talking to all of us. Maybe those first two lines are the ones that really resonate for you. The two lines that I've been working with most recently are, let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Now, I don't usually use the word reprove or admonish, but for me, the way this one turns out is that keeping the trust of my teachers, that they see me as a person whose pathway, whose practice is sincere, that I'm doing my practice. It's really important to me that I don't break that trust. Those are the people the wise ones might later reprove. So see what might be a couple lines for you. A great way to practice everything in the Dharma is in relationships. But certainly the paramis have a big place there. You know, we start with some of our highest intentions to treat others kindly and do no harm. And we also remember how interconnected we are. And that we want to live from a place of understanding our deep interconnections, that we're all so similar. I've shared in the past this little mantra I use with difficult people in my life. I'll call her Jane. And I say, let Jane be Jane. And when that happens, what Jane has done is still annoying and still difficult for me, but I can feel a softening. I can feel a building of allowing, of accepting, of letting her be who she is. It bleeds into the letting things be the way they are, letting others be where they are. It brings in the paramis of patience and wisdom, generosity, renunciation, metta, equanimity. It brings in all of them. So in relationships, do you really bring the energy of mutuality, of mutual benefit? Remember that we practice not for ourselves alone. We practice for our benefit, for the benefit of others, and moving towards peace. Another practice is reminding yourself of what your highest values are. Kind of where's your ethical compass? And remembering that what we do in the world really matters. We have influence and agency. And asking ourselves, kind of doing a regular assessment, not to go to judgment and berating and putting ourselves down and, oh, how awful I am, but really asking, well, how am I doing? If my highest aspiration is to be kind to others, what about that last interaction with that clerk who was so slow and who was just so not doing the job. Was I being kind? You know, and so asking ourselves, how am I doing? How am I showing up in my world? Am I living out my highest aspirations? And certainly, and it's an element of everything we do, is to look at the ego, look at the self, and maybe even do it with some humor. So a recent talk at Clear Mountain, the teacher was bringing up the quality of humility. And I thought, oh, that's a really good quality. And then the little small me, that one who's little but has a really big voice, is like, yeah, but what about me? You know, what about what I need and what I want? And I was recently at two parties. I don't go to a lot of parties. And, oh, my goodness, I revert back to being about 14, where I am just, I don't fit in. I sat down at the wrong place. I should have been over here. How come this person is not asking me any questions? All of that selfing. And sometimes, and I was able to smile at myself quite a bit. I went, oh boy, is this familiar? And just knowing that we carry around that self. Sometimes, you know, it's pretty quiet, and other times it's really loud. One of the last practices I would suggest is coming up with a mantra for yourself. So over the years since we've been doing Sunday, I've shared my main mantra, which I developed after my partner died suddenly, which is, you know, may I trust in the natural unfolding of life, and may I receive that unfolding with wisdom and understanding. And it's walked with me through these 7 years of grief and confusion. And recently, like the last 6 months, I've added one, which is, may I be at ease with whatever comes my way. And I have to say that I'm not at ease with whatever comes my way, but having the mantra gives me another choice. Things come my way and I get stirred up, and then I go, oh, what if I were at ease with that? So there might be a mantra that works for you. In the last few minutes of my talk, I just wanted to share some of, I call them my greatest hits of the Paramis. And Nina did such a great job last week in kind of going through what it has meant for her. And here are some of the highlights for me. I think on renunciation, which is such a challenging one, I love this definition. Let go of anything that doesn't support your aspiration. It really ties it with, why do you practice? What's your aspiration for your practice? And can you look at things that are sticky and that you're holding on to? Do they support that or not? A second is to really accept where we are in each moment. To start where we are. It's the only place we can. You know, these aspirations for our practice are important to help us set direction and keep us focused. Not to berate ourselves because we haven't achieved them yet. You know, we start where we are. Ajahn Suchito said in one of his chapters in his book on the Paramis, he encouraged us to give up the ranting of the self in order to find a more natural tune. The three stages of that Ajahn Suchito put forth about practicing with the Paramis, and we've talked about a lot. You know, the first one is a beginning understanding, reading about it, exploring it. The second is really practicing with it. And the third is when it becomes just a natural response to life. You know, the paramis are called the perfections. And it seems to me that the parami becomes a perfection when it becomes that natural response to life. When it's just what we do naturally, it's daily, it's regular, it's not special. When you just find that you're faced with a situation, what comes forward is generosity and your values, and you're all aligned with it and you're settled and you're in the truth of things. From the very beginning of my practice, I was taught that I've really come to believe this is so true, that we never practice for ourselves alone. Just as in our Sunday community statement talks about that, and the words that come mostly from Ajahn Suchito, that we practice for my benefit, the benefit of others, and to bring forth peace. The world these are difficult times. I think maybe all times have been difficult, but for us, they often seem a little more difficult than what we've experienced in the past. The world really needs our practice of mindfulness, kindness, morality, compassion, patience. On the retreat with Philip Moffat a few weeks ago, he reminded us that we practice practice. We don't practice perfection. We practice our practice. Each moment is an opportunity to practice the paramis, to practice in alignment with our values. One of the other things that I really loved about the paramis is, and this came partly from a Tiwari talk, about practicing with the natural law of things. You know, we practice with and have patience with this law of self and how who we are and with others. But there's this natural law that life unfolds as it does in its own time and in its own way. And I also loved our month on right energy and right effort, where Carrie Peterson reminded us that right balance of energy and effort can really feel wobbly. Just because it's wobbly doesn't mean it's off balance. It can be right balance and you can feel really wobbly. So next year, we are going to be studying the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. And it seems like what we need as we get started with it is bringing the paramis along with us. You know, a heart, mind that's filled with the sweetness and the challenges of the paramis. I think we're going to be perfectly ready for the new year. Because when we've made these paramis a regular part of our daily life, where we're willing to sit with and be with and feel the burn of when the opposites show up, we can really utilize them as we enter into this new year of study. We'll need all the determination and resolve, the kindness, the equanimity, renunciation, wisdom, all of that. And I really want to encourage us all to approach this new year of study with a fresh mind. Many of us have heard many, many Dharma talks on the Four Noble Truths. And it's great. And bring along with you in this new year whatever you already know about them, however you've already practiced. Yay, and bring it along. But also, let's hold that knowing with an open hand, not with a tight fist. Let's be prepared to see and hear and experience things in a new and fresh way. I so appreciate your attention and thank you for hanging in there with me. We're going to be breaking up into small groups. So it's such an opportunity to perhaps just share how this year's been for you, although you may have already had that opportunity in previous Sundays this month since we've been reviewing it all month. Or perhaps my suggestion about the Metta Sutta and picking up a line or two and to really work with, or the opposites. How do you think about practicing with them and bringing them along with us as we start 2025 on the Four Noble Truths, which was the Buddha's first teaching and kind of like the central core of it all? Okay, so those of you who need to leave, goodbye and thank you and Happy New Year and all of the good stuff. Welcome back. So how you doing with this end of the year on paramis? So Lauren, please.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you for a lot of things in your talk, but the one I wanted to bring up was the reminder of the ouch of it that Philip talks about, and how that process of, another thing we talked about was being patient, where the Ajahn said, you know, don't be in a hurry to go from the opposite that is what we want to let go of to what we aspire to. And that ouch of it is so important. Mm. And the ouch gives the effect of the depth of feeling the dukkha. And the, you know, to really know, I know this is suffering. And then I was thinking of the two wings of the Dharma, our wisdom and compassion. And that's how we develop them, is sitting in that suffering gives us wisdom and compassion. And the compassion piece is really important. Mm-hmm. So, I really appreciate that. Thank you. And that's a good thing to take with the paramis into the Four Noble Truths. So thanks so much, Suze.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thanks for tying all that together. Because in Philip's book that we're going to be using for next year, it's Dancing with Life. He talks quite a bit in his section on dukkha, of sitting with the ouch of it. Judith and then Candace, please.
I didn't have.
Oh, much. I thought you. I'm sorry. Never mind. Candace.
I can probably think of something, but. Yeah.
No, it's fine, Judith. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to, when you were talking about the opposites, Suze, it reminded me of something I've been playing with since Philip's retreat, of asking myself when I'm not feeling available in the moment, what's going on? And it's often the paramis that help me see. I kind of go through the list. Am I being ungenerous? Am I being untruthful? Is there something I need to renounce? Or am I just not equanimous right now? And it's really, I really want the clarity of being present, especially when I'm in a conversation with a friend. And playing with this about why am I not available? What's going on? Has really helped. And I saw when you were talking about the opposites, that's what I'm doing. I'm just using a different word for it. You know, what's going on here? And why is that doing this to me? So thank you.
I love hearing how people are practicing with stuff. And there was a question about the book we're going to be using next year. It's on the website. So I don't need to put it in a chat. It's Philip Moffitt's book, Dancing with Life. And so it's we have a resource section on the website, and it'll not only show the Sunday ones, but what Tim Tuary and Carrie are going to be using next year as well. So it'll have all the different resources on it.
Have you checked? Is it there yet?
I have not.
I don't think it's there.
You're our website guru on Sundays.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's going to go up the beginning of the year, so it's
okay.
But I'm not sure that I have.
Then I will put it in the chat for you, Andy, so that you'll. Yeah. And there's also a way for signing up to a teaching every week from Philip around from that book, which is also a pretty wonderful way of getting into it. One of his main teachers was Ajahn Sumedho, who taught the Four Noble Truths as 12 insights. And it kind of goes back to Ajahn Suchito's stuff, the three stages and paramis. They're real similar with the Four Noble Truths, and where you really practice and embody them and feel them fully. And so it's going to be fun to, well, I don't know if you think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be fun to spend another whole year on the Four Noble Truths. They're so central. So anybody else, how was the year of paramis and how they're showing up for you? Anybody or anything else? Julie, please.
Hi. Yeah, thank you so much, Suze. I really loved practicing with the paramis this year a lot. Learned so much about myself, and the metta practice, which was, not so easy for me to access for a while, but, coming into the metta month, I really resolved to, go for it and do it and just keep trying and trying and trying. And there was just kind of a breakthrough there. And I found that it's just, it just helps with everything. I mean, with everything. But especially with remembering that it's a practice, not a perfection that we're practicing, right? Mm-hmm. We get there when we get there. We're patient with it. I also wanted to thank Candace. I love that idea of, when you're not feeling right, like, circling through the perfections and seeing what's really going on here. And also just one more thing I want to say before I stop talking is gratitude for the Sangha. I just so appreciate being able to share the teachings and just our own personal experiences. Mm.
Yeah, and all the wisdom that gets shared, it's just, I learned so much from everyone. Thank you, Julian. Your comment about metta not being easy, I imagine most of us would share that it's, it's a deep practice, and all the ways that we don't feel like ready for it or accessible to it, or I know for me, for years, it just felt like, oh, this is like making affirmations and it didn't mean anything. And, what am I doing? And when I finally opened to it fully, what a difference it made. So thank you. Nicole, please.
I want to start by just thanking all of the teachers and all of you who've participated in these Sunday sits. I typically am at a 12-step meeting at this time, but Suze, you invited us specially one Thursday, and I was like, okay, I'm coming. And I'm so glad I did. I told people in my group, I came to Sims through the gateway of Cloud Mountain and Tim Guile being my pretty constant teacher for years. And one time I was there with he and Tuareg, and Tuareg was like, you really need Sangha. I was like, okay. So I started dipping in my toe here and there and here and there. And this year of practicing on the Paramis has been such a rich addition to my practice. And I listen to all of the Sunday meetings that are put up on the Sims podcast. And I sit with people on Thursdays and I go to Mondays when I can. And I just have to say, Tuareg is right. Sangha is the whole of the practice. And what I really feel like I gained this year, in addition to feeling this sense of connection to others who are practicing in this way, is I came into the year feeling like, yeah, I know what the Paramis are. The Paramis are good news. Like, yeah, okay, good. Let's study them some. But then with the depth of one a month, I was really able to start, like, I fed each of the Paramis, but what I also fed was my own curiosity. And like, well, what else is available in patience? What else might be available in resolve? And what I found in all of that curiosity is increasing softness, less striving. Like, these are not necessarily 10 aspects that I need to perfect to be a good Buddhist. These are 10 areas of fertile contemplation. And when I am in them, what I am finding for myself is increased softness and increased compassion for my humanity, and also increased inspiration about the vista of where this quality can take me. And so I'm just so newly inspired and accepting of who and where I am in this moment. And also, I'm so grateful to have my curiosity sort of renewed, because when you tell me that you're going to study the Four Noble Truths, I'm like, oh my God, I've been studying the Four Noble Truths every January for 22 years. It doesn't sound exciting to me. But then I'm just like, yeah, but look at how this last year has been. You get to study the Four Noble Truths in Sangha with freshness. And it sounds like a gift. And isn't that funny? So anyway, thank you, everyone. The teachers, the students, you have all really added to my year this year. And I'm deeply, deeply grateful.
In the at Clear Mountain, whenever something like that gets shared, we all do this really loud sadhu, sadhu, or sparkly fingers. We do that too, and hearts. And Gene isn't here this morning, but he has this great little post-it with a heart and sangha on it. You know, the three refuges are the three legs of a stool, and they're all feed each other, the Buddha and the inspiration and the Dhamma and all the teachings and the Sangha, as we share how we're dealing with it all. And I just want to say thank you to everybody for being so willing to be vulnerable and real with each other. Who'd have thought that 5 years ago when we started Zoom and hated it, and that here we are, you know each other and we're willing to be so real. And a big thank you to everyone. I'm sorry that we went over a couple minutes, but I do want to share the dedication of merit. Every Saturday at Clear Mountain, we do some chanting. And when we chant the Brahma Viharas, there's a phrase in it that says, "And to all as to myself." So just as I wish for myself, may I be at ease with life as it shows up. May all beings be at ease with their lives. Just as I wish for myself wellness and happiness, may all beings experience being well and happy. Just as I wish for myself an end to suffering, may all beings be free of suffering and know peace. And may the merit of our beautiful practice this morning be shared with all. May all know the end of suffering and live in peace. Thanks, everybody. Happy New Year to everybody. See you back here in January. And if anybody's traveling, safe travels.